The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's a Sunday morning. It's Beat 102-103. And think about this one. When was the last time you got your shoes repaired rather than throwing them in a bin and starting all over again? Well, our throwaway society has become the plight for the trade of the cobbler. Michael Rossiter is a cobbler in Kilkenny City and he comes via Tullow in County Carlow. And in fact, he's only one of 30 cobblers left in the country. He caused quite a stir during the week thanks to an article that he was in the Irish Times, and Michael joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning. You're very welcome. You're a media expert at this stage, Michael.
Oh, my hand is worn out, Orla, with all the signatures.
Did you think that so many people would be interested in this story of really the demise of the cobbler?
I really didn't think so. That's being honest with you. I was approached by the Irish Times just to have a chat about where we were going and all the rest, and one thing led to another. And no, didn't realise that you are Libby on to me.
Well, here you are, Michael. And for like, you're a very much a southeast man because you're originally from County Carlow, but your business is in Kilkenny City on the Butterslip. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, right in the centre of town, Orla, yeah.
Good stuff. And you've been doing this for how long?
Well, I'm a big zero next year, Orla.
Oh, okay.
And I can remember at 8 years of age,
wow,
stitching handbags and satchels for back to school in my dad's shop,
okay,
on the Bishop Street in Tullow in Carlow.
Ah.
So, yeah, long time.
And was this a natural progression then, that you were always going to be a cobbler thanks to your dad?
What was it? No, it wasn't, because from 8 till 20 or 21, when I was in that shop, between one thing and another, between school and holidays and all that kind of stuff, everyone would always say, "Oh, Matty, oh, you have a natural succession." And I'd look at them with this big frown on them and I'd say, "You have your wacky, no, nothing happening there." But an opportunity came up, Orla, when I was 21 or 2.
Okay.
And there was a place in Kilkenny that was up for rent. And I said, "Sure, what have I got to lose?" And one thing led to another. And 3 years later, after that lease, I moved from that place and bought my own place after 3 years.
Oh, brilliant. And the Butterslip is a great place to be because lots of clothing stores and lots of footfall as well.
Yeah, it is. And it's kind of that quaint medieval part of Kilkenny. You know, I mean, we get an awful lot of tourists down along this little slipway, and especially the Chinese, no, the Japanese, my apologies. They come in with their cameras and their video cameras, right, and their phones. And here they are, and they're taking pictures and they're taking videos and all the rest.
It's have
wonderful,
you?
Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh.
They know you have star power, Michael.
We're talking about maybe cobblers coming extinct in Ireland, but they must be extinct in Japan.
They must be extinct.
They don't know what
Japan.
We are. Yeah.
So there's only 30 cobblers left in Ireland. Does that mean you're the only cobbler in Kilkenny then?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
It is.
And
but that's
I know,
not new.
Yeah.
That's not new. Like, every county would be lucky to have one now at this stage, aren't
Yeah, I know of a few in County Wexford where I'm from.
There is. Yeah.
And I have to say, like, my bag broke recently and I intend to go into the cobbler's, but I suppose we're so used to doing everything online that it's almost a task for me to have to go into Gorey and go up to the cobbler's. And is that part of the problem, that everything... Most things can be done via the internet these days. Yeah.
Yeah, you could be right, but you're not going to get that bag stitched online. You might be showing how to get it done, but you're going to need the physicality behind it to do it, needless to say.
Exactly.
Yeah, but like, if these places aren't used, Orla, if you're not going to use him and his services, a time is going to come and he won't be there for you. You know,
exactly.
And what are you going to do with the bag then?
Yeah.
And we all talk about the circular economy.
Yeah.
You know,
you are part of that.
Unless you use it. Yeah.
And Shona from Beat Breakfast has a pair of Doc Martens. She was telling me that she got stretched in the cobbler's and it was such a reasonable price as well. So it doesn't cost an arm and a leg to get shoes rehealed or zips fixed and things.
No, fair price. I'm all for being fair with people. Mm.
What do you say to people, Michael, like, who might be about, oh, these runners are a bit wrecked, so I threw them away and start again? Like, what can you do for people to ensure that they save a bit of money in a time when it's really expensive to live?
Well, the biggest problem that people have with runners, Orla, right, is that their big toe comes out through the toe.
Okay.
Right? Now, simple as that.
Yeah, can you stitch that?
I would repair at least, kid you not, I would repair at least 15 pairs of those a week.
Okay.
Right? Now, what about the people that don't know about that? Look at my toes coming out. My toe comes out every. I could get 2 or 3 months out of it, and then I fling them out. I say, here, listen on to Orly here on Beat, and say, yes, those toes can be fixed.
Right, that's good
now,
to know.
Now, having said that, an awful lot of these, you could pay 200 euros for a pair of runners. Mm-hmm. You have the bubbles that are in them. You can't repair the bubbles.
Okay.
You know the shock absorbers, can't replace those.
You can't replace those.
But there's an awful lot of the upper that you can replace and can repair. Like the backs for your heels, the back liners, sometimes they kind of wear away.
Oh yeah, that happens to me a lot, yeah.
Yeah, you can get a new back liner and that can be put in nice and strategically put in there. The toes can be done. On the upper market runners, let's say the ones that are used for, let's say, mountain trekking and things like that, you can put a whole bottom unit on the bottom.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Whip on, whip off. You know, but there's a lot of bits and pieces you can do with them now, in fairness, yeah.
And are there shoes that you see coming back from the same people again and again who might have shoes decades even?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Really? And I'd look at them, I'd say, oh, here we go again. Yeah, haven't got the heart to throw them out, Michael, what's next? That happens very regular, you know. And I might even dwell back to when I was doing them the last time and say, oh, Jesus, Ross, you had a terrible hardship with this one. Oh, God, here we go again, you know. But look, we're not in a position to pick and choose. Like, you're either a shoe repairer or you're not, Arla.
Yes, of course you are.
Right, and you either repair or you're not. You can't be pickish. You can't choose what.
No,
oh, I'm
not.
Only going to do this type of work. You know what I mean?
And do you enjoy it, Michael? Is there a little bit of mindfulness in it when you're doing the repair stuff?
There is, but to be honest with you, you have your good days. It's like every trade, Arla.
Of course.
You have your good days and you have your bad days, and you might have 100 great people, and then you'd have one person,
and they'll always taint it on you, I'm afraid.
You know what I mean? And that's the one person.
You remember.
You'll go home and you say, oh God.
Yeah.
Why did they say that? Why did they do that?
And have you anyone coming up from your family who might take over from you?
No.
No one interested?
No, unfortunately. And that's probably what preempted that story in the Irish Times you were doing. No, there isn't. And how many of those 28 or 30 or 32 fellas around the country, have they got anyone coming up?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the plain truth of it all. Like, it's been going on for years. But it's been slowly, like, the numbers have been coming down, ones and twos, you know what I mean?
Okay,
ones
and that's and so twos, sad to you know? See. It really is.
It is, because when it's gone, there won't be no market to resurrect it.
You'll be sad then. So listen, if you're a fan of the Doc Martens, which are really big at the moment, or have you a shoe with the heel has gone completely lopsided, don't throw them away. Let's get these cobblers up and running again. And if you want to head to the one in County Kilkenny in Kilkenny City, that is Michael Rossiter's, and he's on the Butcher Slip in Kilkenny City. Are you good on the old social media or anything, Michael?
Let's say my son is.
So have you got an Instagram or anything?
We have our Facebook. Yeah, okay. We have our Rossiter Shoe Repairs and Pedartics. People can follow us.
Okay.
And we can give them little snippets now and
good
then.
Stuff. If you want to have a follow of that, that is Rossiter's Shoe Repairs and that is Michael Rossiter. Michael, thanks a million for talking to me this morning.
You're very welcome, Orla. Anytime. Thank you.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103. The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
It's Beat 102-103 on this Sunday morning. That is music from Pausa with Money Talks. And let's talk panto, but not panto as you know it. And you're probably all pantoed out now. I know I've been to two already, so I know all the lingo. But this is a panto with a difference, because Thomastown Pantomime Productions in County Kilkenny are bringing a panto for adults in March. It's Kilkenny's first ever adults only pantomime. It's promising a night of some of the filthiest, funniest and rudest innuendo around. Mark Duffy from Thomastown Panto joins me to tell us more this morning. And Mark, full disclosure now, it is Sunday morning, so we need to talk about this new adults only panto in a PG manner, please.
I'll do my very best, Darla. I'll do my very best.
Are you just over panto season, normal panto season at Thomastown Pantomime Society?
Yeah, well, pretty much. We would have staged we're about 2 years in existence now, Arla, here in Thomastown. We would have staged our second pantomime, Cinderella, mid-November. So, well, we're just over, but I suppose we're over, you know, kind of a couple of months at this stage.
Yes, because I was at, like, the panto in Gorey only 2 weeks ago. So
yes.
Pantos are a funny time, aren't they? They can go well before Christmas or into January.
Yeah, panto season, it kind of goes from that kind of mid-November to kind of, I suppose even now, there's still one or two, even still, I think they finished up the big one in Cork Opera House only there the other day.
Yeah, Wexford Opera House as well.
Yeah, and Gorham, which would be only up the road from Thomastown. They have theirs, I think, in February,
okay.
and Castle Comer here in Kilkenny as well are open next week with Sleeping Beauty. So it's kind of nearly a 3-4 month kind of window there, kind of really for Panto.
And every town seems to have it these days.
Well, it's just such a thing for community and for, you know, local towns and cities. And look, it's the age old thing about Panto, the family Panto. It's one of them probably theatre shows that, like, literally everybody in the family goes to, like, whether that be the 3-year-old child or the granny or the grandmother, everybody can go. There's something in it for everyone. Yeah, so that's the attraction of it, like, do you know what I mean?
But not everyone is welcome at your new pantomime, are they?
Strictly over 18s, I'm afraid. For any of your listeners who are under that age, it's strictly over 18s.
Now, you did Cinderella, as you said, in Thomastown in November. You're doing Cinderella again, but with a twist. It's Cinderella with an S. The sin in Cinderella is very important, and the tagline is, "Oh, you say it, Mark."
No, you say it, Mark.
No, you
it's
say
your
it.
Show. It's Cinderella gagging for a ball.
There you go.
That's it. What a tagline!
How did you come up with this idea?
It's something I was kind of toying with it in my own head for the last kind of few months. Adult Panto is a pretty popular concept in the UK, actually, not so much in Ireland yet. There is a group in Cork I was aware of that kind of do it on a small scale as well. And what it was, my own son, Harry, who finished a run, he was in the Olympia Panto Freezing there only recently.
Okay.
Yeah. Up there with Al Porter and a few others.
That's
so they actually did a one night only panto in the middle of that run. They actually did Tinderella. and I went to, and I was kind of, yeah, we go to see this now. This could be fun. It was sold out, the Olympia, 1,200 people. So myself, my wife, and a couple of friends went up to that. It was an hilarious night. Like, it was crazy. It was mad. but it was a brilliant, brilliant show. And I kind of came over and said, right, that's it now. That's swung it for me now.
I'm going to do it.
So that was, just there. Was it early January, late December? Late December. And then I just took out the pen and paper, and I was involved with Snow White here in the Watergate in Kenny. And we had a bit of a window there. We had a couple of nights where shows were cancelled with the recent snow.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of launched into it there, and I kind of put it together and asked a few people that I know that were involved in local theatre to get involved. They were only too happy. And it kind of screwed from there then, really.
Okay.
And we went on sale there last Monday.
Okay.
And so tickets are going really, really well so far.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm really happy, yeah.
And it's not till March anyway, so people will have kind of moved away from the whole idea of a Christmas pantomime to this more risque version. A lot of ooh or misses. It sounds very kind of carry on type stuff, is it?
It is, and that's it exactly. It's just a bit of... okay, it's panto, but it's just a bit of fun where people, parents, adults over 18 can come, leave the kids at home, have a good crack with their friends. Even my own brother, they're booked a heap of tickets for on the nights, but he's meeting up with a load of friends and they're coming, they're having a night out, and they're coming to the show just for a bit of a laugh, a bit of crack, do you know what I mean? And I suppose, look, we like everything with adults or with pantos, we'll have a lot of kind of audience interaction and that kind of stuff, you know what I mean?
So
just a bit of fun. Yeah, a bit of fun, a bit of crack. That's it exactly. That's the underlying or kind of what we're hoping to get out of this. Like, it's just a bit of fun and a bit of crack where adults can come together. Clears is a lovely little venue, small little venue. It only holds about 70 per show.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be very intimate. It'll be a bit of crack, a bit of fun. And say we'll get away. Well, hopefully we'll get away with a lot of stuff that we can't do at a family pantomime.
So what did you do, Mark? Did you sit down with a old panto script and just put all the innuendos in that you couldn't for a PG version? Or how did you do this?
No, look, well, I've kept, like, we've kept, you know, the traditional story of Cinderella, like, you know, it's pretty kind of prevalent throughout this. But no, it's a completely original kind of script that I sat down and just put pen to paper on. I suppose keeping in mind the traditional story of Cinderella, but like, obviously with a lot of kind of twists and innuendos. And I won't say too much now on a Sunday morning radio show for fear of being run out of town. But
like, is Cinderella the usual kind of demure, beautiful,
Yeah. No,
princess
she is.
That we know, or what is she?
She is. No, she is. But she would have kind of a sassy and a saucy side.
Okay.
To be honest with you. And you know, there is, I suppose, a lot of the kind of character names are kind of quite adult in their in their. Yeah, yeah.
Did you do a lot of Googling to find these sort of puns?
Yes, we did. And I kind of, like always when I do these kind of, you know, when I write traditional, the family panto scripts, I give them to my wife and she kind of gives me the go ahead. Yes, you can do that, Mark. No, you can't do that. That's not, you know what I mean? So she's kind of my proofreader slash, like, you know, telling me what I can and what I can't put in. So, no, like, there's nothing really off limits with this now. There is. Probably 99.9% of stuff are not off limits. Like, there's one or two places, obviously, we could, you know, remember you're not going to go to. But I mean, generally, look, it's just a good fun. It kind of, you know, it just kind of takes the, or it just makes fun and makes light of kind of if you, different kind of, you know, and a lot of kind of innuendo and foul language and stuff like that. But just stuff that you probably hear in the pub of a Saturday night anyway. Like, it's all different.
And as you said, lots of interaction as well from the audience, which is, you know, that's what I love about panto, is that you can be shouting, he's behind you. But whatever they're shouting in Clears in March, I don't know.
Yeah. Look, it keeps the elements of the traditional family panto, like, you know, it really does, like, only I suppose it's geared towards that over 18s adults kind of grouping. But like, in terms of, we said, like, audience interaction and that kind of stuff, that's all still in it, like, do you know what I mean? But and look, the show, it's an hour long. We're doing two shows a night over the 2 nights, so it's 4 shows in total.
So March 8th and 9th. So what are you doing? Kind of an earlier time and a later time, or?
Yeah, so yeah, what we're doing a 7:30 show and a 9 o'clock show on Saturday.
Yeah, I see a good few places doing that now. And is the 9 o'clock show even more risque than the 7:30 one?
No, it's all, we're going all out for the 4.
matinees is what I was trying to say. So no, 2 shows at night.
Look, as each show goes on stage, it could change dramatically and scripts could change, but that's all part of the fun, like.
It sounds like really good crack. It really does. And an hour is great. No interval, I presume, then, in that
No, that's it. You just come in, have a couple of drinks before, have a bit of a laugh, come in for the hour, have your, you know, meet up with friends and stuff. No interval. And go out then, have a few more drinks in Clear's Bar after as well, and have a good night with family and friends and stuff. Yeah.
March is the month. The dates are the 8th and the 9th of March. It's in Clear's Theatre, as Mark said, in Kilkenny City. 2 nights only, but 2 shows at 7:30 p.m. and 9 p.m. Where can people get tickets or find out more details, Mark?
Yeah, so if people want, we have our ticket company that we're dealing with. It's greatadvents.ie. So it's www.greatadvents.ie. It's great as in GR with the letter or with the number 8. Great Events, Colm and the team up there do a fantastic job. They're really great to deal with. And then the Thomastown Pantomime Productions on Instagram or Facebook, you'll get any information there.
Brilliant.
As well.
And you have the website up there for those Great Events as well, do you?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The links will all be on the Facebook, and Great Events have their own website as well. And all the shows will be up there and stuff. So people just click on there, they can grab their tickets and come along and have just what we hope will be a brilliant night. What we know will be a brilliant night in Clears in March.
And who's your big star in this? Because is Cinderella asleep for most of this? Or, like, who's the big character in it?
We have a lovely small, we have a cast of about 7, and we have three dancers coming, dancers joining us as well. So we have a group of 10. A lot of names, like the people involved, would be well known in Kilkenny circles for performing and drama and pantomime as well. A good few were only in the recent Snow White at the Watergate Theatre as well. So so like there would be like myself, I'm involved, Leah Comfort, Claire
and who
Enriquez.
Are you, Mark? Who are you in?
I am one of the ugly sisters.
Oh, very good. Okay,
I'm the less ugly sister,
of
obviously. I won't divulge any names or anything.
No, don't. But we look forward to seeing you ugly sister. Well, if you want to head over to Thomastown Pantomime Society on Facebook or Instagram, that's where you'll get more details, or you can book on that greatevents.ie. As I said, it's March 8th and 9th at Clears Theatre. Adults only panto. Tell them the title again there, Mark.
It's Cinderella with an S. Cinderella Gagging for a Ball.
Beautiful. You're like an ad. Thanks a million. Like a voiceover artist. Lovely, Mark. Best of luck with it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Beat 102-103 on a Sunday morning. Okay, well, you know by now, sleigh has been chosen as the children's slang word of the year. The phrase, which means something has been done very well, sleigh queen, sleigh, claims, I know that's very embarrassing, claims the top spot in an annual survey by Oxford University, and it's based on children aged 6 to 14. Kindness is the 2024 Children's Word of the Year, which is really lovely. To talk about this and other words that have made it into the Oxford Dictionary in the last year is Chris Mulhall. He's a lecturer in French and Italian at SETU, and he's an interest in all things linguistics, and he's an all-round Sigma guy, really, aren't you, Chris?
Thanks for the compliment, Orla. I'll take it, Jeff, for sure.
Sigma. Where do these come from? It's bizarre to me, but also every generation has their own words. When I think of things, I still say the deadlies of the world. Being from Wexford, everything is queer hot or queer cold. But things like deadly and to kiss was to shift. I'm sure, you know, 16 and 17 year olds aren't using those words anymore.
No, things have moved on a bit, or all right, since some of those words. But I think one thing about language, obviously, is it just evolves with the generations. And some of the words that are coming up, like slay and riz, sigma, skibbity, they're probably mostly warehoused through social media.
Okay.
And if you look at it, I suppose, in an analogy, social media is more or less like a globe of language in itself. Mm-hmm. And with all the different platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, I'm sure I'm missing one, they all have like their own type of language. Now, it's sort of broadly called the language of the internet, but how people communicate on each of them is very, very different. So, for example, if you have a Facebook account and you had a Snapchat account, you would behave very, very differently on them.
Yes.
And in the evolution of all of that, and I mean, even if you look at something like LinkedIn, that's an internet, it has a language to it, very professional. Mm-hmm. So I think what these sort of represent in language terms would be like a dialect.
Okay.
So if that there's all little mini dialects, they might sort of share features, but they will evolve from something and then probably keep moving away from that. So if there's something I'm referring to there is standard language. So if you look at like on LinkedIn and Facebook, there tends to be type a written text type.
Yes.
And if you go to the other end of the continuum, then you're probably on Snapchat, which is largely visual with maybe emojis and a couple of words, maybe like sigma, skibbity, riz, all that sort of stuff thrown into it. So it's two ends of a continuum, really.
But say you're on Snapchat, Chris. Would it not be very embarrassing if you used those words?
Yeah, of course. because, no, absolutely. And this is, I think, this is where the language is a demarcator of age.
Yes.
And the fact that young people are using this language, I think it's been viewed quite negatively. And then sort of vicariously, social media has been blamed for it. But young people have always used their own language, because if you look at language, the language development theory, is children learn language from their parents, mm-hmm. but they communicate like their peers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they very, very rarely communicate like their parents, if at all, at any point, probably post 8, 9 years of age, at least now anyway, or maybe earlier, I'd say at this stage. So the fact that they imitate what their peers do is a marker just of being socially accepted. I mean, peer influence in childhood is a huge factor. So speaking like your peers and being literate with them is really important, because it's all socio-normative. So the rules apply. There's in-group and out-group. Now, the thing about the social media is that it almost creates an in-group in itself, Orla, because if you're connected to someone on a social media platform, you're connected. But the language will keep you in the conversation.
Okay. So it's
really important.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then, Chris, what about things like, I remember about pre-COVID, so maybe 6 years ago, my friend's teenage daughter was using the phrase tea a lot. So what's the tea? For gossip. Now I hear people of my generation using that. Does it kind of come into our own globe and our own ether after a while? Now, I don't want to be using riz and sigma and skibbity for definite. I don't. But I do say things like, what's the tea? And does it suddenly become kind of socially the norm and therefore uncool then?
That's a really interesting example, actually, because sometimes language doesn't necessarily progress from younger to older, actually, so much. But what we tend to do is we might mimic it or ask about it largely out of curiosity, because we want to know what it is. But you've stumbled on something as well as, One way to chase a trend in any way, and language would be no different out, is to actually start using it if you're an adult and your child uses it, because then it becomes desperately uncool.
Oh, totally.
So I have said these words around my kids and they're like putting their hands in their face. What are you doing? You're like, you don't know what you're doing, sort of. It's literally like recklessness of language. And I think, why is that? It's just because the sound we have as an adult, you have an older sound. Mm-hmm. You're socially just sort of different. Even though if you're the same family, you're in a different generation. So therefore, using what they use is almost like an infringement of sorts.
Yes.
And you can be very quickly labeled, that's not good, you're using it wrong. Uh-huh. And the problem with it, it's not that people use it wrong, is that I find words like, for example, sigma.
Yes.
Which we would have started as, what's the sigma? So okay. Sigma, obviously, is the letter of the Greek alphabet, or for those that might be familiar with Excel, Microsoft Excel, you know, it's the maths function or whatever else.
Yes.
But sigma is a word that has largely come in through the Gen Alpha, if you know what I mean, those born 2010, 2025 sort of area. And the meaning of it seems to be shifting quite a bit. So it has sometimes a positive meaning, sometimes it's not so positive. It's because even within the intergenerational shift, like 10 to 25 is 15 years. So you could have a 14-year-old, a 7-year-old using it quite differently. So that's how quick the gear change is on language, Orla. But I suppose to answer your question, do we take it on? Yeah, maybe sometimes. But when we take it on, it's a bit like the bandwagon is going to go out of town then.
Yes.
Because if the adults take it on, it's not going to be cool anymore. But I think we're largely insulated from the platforms the kids are on. And
yes.
So we might not know what the language changes.
Totally,
are.
Our algorithm doesn't lead us to these people.
Yeah, no, not so much. Exactly.
Do these people, this generation, Generation Alpha or Gen Z, if they're using it too, do they age out of Skibidi? Will Skibidi die? Will Riz die?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's not that they will. I think it's not necessarily ephemeral. Like, it's not going to last a short time.
Okay.
But their development stages, I mean, look, you can break probably adolescence broadly into three stages, like, you know, early, mid and late. I would imagine some of this stuff would be departing. So would you necessarily hear it among college age, or that may or may not, you know? So it could be an adolescent stage. But what's interesting about these trends, Orla, is because on a sort of a more sociolinguistic level and a more societal level, there's a sense that, like, kids' literacy is declining, if you know what I mean. And there's sort of national reports that have been suggestive of that type, you know, kids are reading, writing, all that sort of. But kids are more literate now than ever. So, mm-hmm. like, they're texting more. Like, you know, most people would probably text instead of speak. Mm-hmm. So there's an ingrained literacy in all this. Now, the rub comes into it, Orla, is that these terms like Skibidi Riz and Sigma, they aren't standard, well, maybe Sigma accepted, they aren't standard type of words. And I mean, the danger would be is when you cross formal and informal language. So could you get someone in school saying, oh, this country is the Sigma? In a sentence, or
I don't know
if
that's
you're describing
good or bad. Yeah.
Well, exactly. So how do they learn the difference of formal and informal?
Yes.
It's because probably the volume, like, I'll take it. Let's say if you went to school 20 or 30 years ago, you were probably largely reading books and writing and dealing in formal language.
Yes.
And of course, there was informal language of the street at the time and your peer group. But it was probably less than it is now because there's multiple platforms that kids engage with. Mm-hmm. Imagine, like, as I said, probably every social media platform is probably like a little mini country with its own language in a way. So, you know, and obviously the global usership is vast as well. So, yeah, it's a really, really interesting, but I think like the platforms as they're going seem to be getting less wordy. If you look at it,
oh,
so emojis
yes,
and they sent now. That's only my own interpretation of it. But when you look at where we started out with, probably Bebo, Facebook, we might be going back to 2006, 2007. We were writing a lot. Now I don't have Snapchat, but an Instagram is sort of even a little bit before that again. They've tend to base more around pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Or visual images with less text.
Okay.
So what I sort of said a minute ago is we're more literate. Yeah, we're probably interacting more in a literary space, but might we be writing
more
as much?
Visual.
That depends.
Okay.
Yeah, I get you. Nothing wrong with that though. Yeah.
It's just, I find it so interesting. I've said this to you before. I could study this for, well, no, actually, I couldn't study it. I'll never do an exam again. I could go down the rabbit hole of this for hours and hours. Like, I even looked up some of the 70s slang, and some of them are still with us. Mm. Like, one of the slang words from the 70s was jeepers creepers. I use that all the time for when I'm shocked. Mm. Bummer for too bad. down with as if you were okay with it. Like every generation has a slang word, and these slang words are just so quirky this time round. Riz, well, we have to talk about, obviously, the children's slang word of the year is slay, and then comes Riz is the second favourite, Sigma and Skibbity, as in Skibbity Toilet is in there too. So Chris, thanks a million for talking to me this
You're welcome, Morgan, no problem.
You slay in my mind, Chris. You really do.
Thank you.
You've got the Riz. I'm just
I started as a Sigma and I'm ending as a Slayer.
There you go. Isn't that amazing? I'd say we have, in just one short sentence, made those words so uncool, Chris.
Yes, exactly.
That is Chris Mulhall from SETU. Thanks a million, Chris.
Thanks, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
That's Cameron Watson. It's called Blew My Life Up. It's Beat 102 and 103. Okay, well, exciting and unusual news for New Ross this week when it got Ireland's first e-kiosk vending machine. Jordan Casey, who at just 25 has almost a lifetime of experience in the tech world, is one of the people behind Ireland's first automated vending store, which has opened in Irish Town in New Ross. And he joins me this morning to tell me all about it. You're very welcome back to the Sunday Grill. Jordan, I think you hold the record of the person I have spoken to the longest here on the Sunday Grill. I think I'm doing the Sunday Grill 12 years and I have been speaking to you for 12 years.
I think so. Yeah, I remember that in City Square, I think, was the first time we spoke.
And what age would you have been then?
I was 12, 13 at that time.
There you go, 25 now. And at 12 and 13, we were talking to you because, were you coding or what was it that you were doing then?
Yeah, so when I was 12, I launched an iPhone game on the App Store called Alien Ball versus Humans. And so I managed to become Europe's youngest iOS app developer, which managed to, I suppose, boost the game a little bit. Wow. But yeah, it was a long time ago now. It's hard, mad looking back on it.
And where's Alien Ball these days?
He's in obscurity, probably.
Can I find it if I went looking for it?
Very difficult. Doubtful. I tried myself. I've gone through so many computers since and tried to find the old code, but I think it's of a bygone era.
Okay, it's the Bebo of today.
Yeah.
So I've chatted to you at so many things in the tech world, and this is another version. Give us the background to this e-kiosk and the two other people that you're working with on this, two local New Ross men. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So I'm working with, it's a massive team effort, to be honest. Okay. And it's sort of myself, Tomás Young, and Emil Cuxans of ProServe Solutions, who are based out in New Ross and have been involved in retail fit outs through ProServe and also through milk vending machines through Nesty in the past. Okay. And so with a background in sort of vending and tech and sort of just the whole world of retail in general, we're always just fascinated by these sort of high-end vending solutions that you see in Asia, like the likes of Japan and Korea, where basically everything vending machines is just a normal way of life. And we traveled around Central Europe last year and went and visited some other retail vending shops. And we're just blown away by the concept, blown away by just the technology and how cool they are. And we just felt that this could be something that would work in Ireland, hasn't been really done before in Ireland, and just made the decision to go ahead with it. So we've been really working on it the last 6-7 months, finally opened our doors on Wednesday at 71 Irish Town.
Okay. And is it a building or what is it? Is it out on the street building?
Yeah, it's a full store. So you walk in as any regular store, but everything is just surrounded by vending machines.
Wow.
So we've got vending machines for Japanese and Asian candies and drinks, American candies and soft drinks. We've got sort of your regular favorites. We've got meal deals, fresh sandwiches being supplied locally from Trudy's Kitchen. We've got fresh granola and protein balls being supplied locally by Peas and Love. We've got our own Bonyabot, which dispenses fresh milk and fresh protein milk, among so many other things. So it's a mad variety of stuff. You come in, there's touch screens that meet you at the door where you're able to build your cart. So if you're buying things from different machines, it all goes into one order. We've got high-end coffee machines as well. So as much vending and automation that we could fill, we've managed to get in there.
And is it a case that you're bringing, like, for example, for the milk, are you bringing your own vessels to put it into?
So the Nesty companies that sort of behind this as well have built their own machines in the past that have usually been supplied to farmers. So farmers could fill their machines every day with fresh milk. So we're sourcing local milk from farmers and then filling the machines up with it every day. And it's you just go up, you can purchase a glass bottle, put the bottle in the machine and dispense the fresh milk out of the new bottle.
You can use the glass bottle then again if you want to.
Exactly. Yeah.
Brilliant stuff. Tell us about, because, you know, we know all the usual snacks that we get here in Ireland, but like the American candies and the Asian snacks, what sort of stuff are we talking about?
So it's very, very diverse, very diverse mixture. We've tried to get as much new and exciting products as possible. So with the American stuff, we're talking some of the favorites that people might know already, like Reese's or Hershey's, bringing in Twizzlers, Red Vines, all these classic sort of theater box, a lot of sour candies like Warheads. People are really up to the sort of challenge of like sour tasting and sour sweets as well. Then on the Asian and the Japanese side, we brought in Buldak ramens, which are very popular ramens that are really, really spicy. So again, okay, kind of playing on that.
So they're like the noodles that you put the hot water into, yeah?
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so they're so really, really popular. Yeah. So we've got Samyang and Buldak noodles. We've got Fantas that are being imported from China and Korea and Japan. So all these different flavors. We've got bamboo flavor, white peach, apple Fantas. We've got a lot of anime drinks as well. So we've got Ocean Bomb, Sailor Moon, we've got Dragon Ball, Pokemon drinks. Stuff I'd never seen before, but really, really cool. And it's cool to be able to offer something different.
Really cool.
For people.
I love that you're using local produce as well, so that you're using local artisan businesses to create the protein bowls and sandwiches and stuff like that.
Exactly. Like as I've said, the team are based largely in New Ross, and we really want to support the local community as well. So we're working with Trudy's Kitchen, who are providing fresh sandwiches, ciabattas, paninis, pasta pots to us. As I said, we've got local milk supplied as well. We're working with Peas and Love to provide us with granola and protein balls, just to complement all of the candies and fizzy drinks of the world. But
and
yeah,
is it a big room then, Jordan, that you walk into? And is it 24/7 that you can go into it?
So ultimately, the idea is to get it to 24/7. Right now, we're opening from 6 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day.
Okay,
and yeah,
it's
a sizable room. It's just a sort of standard shop unit. So, and obviously filled with the vending machines on each side of the wall, but they wrap around. It's really cool. Really cool inside as well. It's just something that even for me, like seeing it all unfold, it's something I've never seen before. So, okay. And really cool to have it in New Ross as well. Obviously, the guys are local.
Tap only, is it?
Say that again. Sorry.
Just no cash. Tap only, is it?
The machines take cash and card. So when you go up to the machine, you have your choice of payment. So it's basically we call it an order, Bob. So you can touch basically what you want, add it to a cart, and then check out and pay however you need to. And so once you've paid, each machine that you've purchased the items from will start to light up and play music. So it's kind of navigating you where to go. You go around the room, you collect your stuff.
Brilliant.
So it's an experience for sure.
Yeah, and I know it's only going a few days now that you opened on Wednesday, but what's the reaction been like? Like, I presume you've cameras up. Are you seeing people going in at 6 in the morning, for example, or the half past midnight?
Definitely. Like we've just been open a couple of days, but we've been kind of starting to see patterns now. Obviously, when we opened on Wednesday, the place was jammed. But even then, we are kind of seeing our midnight snackers and people popping in to get something last minute. The behaviors are interesting, and obviously for a lot of people, myself included, it's something just completely new, and just kind of navigating it and getting used to it and just knowing that I can just go in, get something, walk out is quite cool. But it's really cool to kind of see how people are reacting to it and like how people are sort of navigating the shop or what people are ordering. Because obviously beforehand we can make as many assumptions as possible, but when you open the doors and see the people actually go in, it's mad.
Yeah, really looking forward to going and checking it out myself. I think a bamboo flavor Fanta would be right up my alley, to tell you the truth.
For sure. Yeah, me too. Me too. The flavors are like the apple and the watermelon. It's just, you know, stuff I've never tried.
Yeah.
It's, mad to see how kind of other cultures sort of use the same brands in different ways.
Oh, and, totally.
And yeah.
Is it, like, for people who don't really know New Ross, like Irish Town, is it easy enough to get to, or?
Yeah, it's easy enough. It's just at the top of the town there. Okay. So the store is located 71 Irish Town. It's across from a couple of different schools. There's parking available as well on the road. So yeah, it's fairly easy to navigate to. We won't be in the main area of the town. Okay. More so at the top of the town.
Okay, good stuff. Best luck with it. Is there anywhere people can have a look at the kiosk and how it looks these days? Are you on social media or anything?
Yeah, we're pretty active now on Instagram and TikTok. So we're just eKiosk Ireland there. And people can get an idea of how the shop looks through some of our different videos and how it works as well.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Oh, I see you easily. Here it is, eKiosk Ireland. And you have a few videos up already, looking at Ireland's first ever automated retail vending store. Jordan, another string to your bow. I know there's lots of people involved with this, but congratulations to you at just 25. I'm sure I'll be talking to you about more stuff over the next few years. But best of luck with everything.
Oh, thanks a million, Orla. I really appreciate it. Great chatting to you.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Across the southeast, it's Beat 102-103 on this Sunday morning. It is time for the movies. And Brian joins me from across the Irish Sea this morning to talk about a much hyped biopic starring Timothy himself as Bob Dylan. It is, of course, a complete unknown. It has a star-studded cast with Elle Fanning and Edward Norton in there as well, and lots of other recognisable faces. And Brian is going to tell us what he thinks. Hello to you.
Hi.
Will we have a listen to A Complete Unknown and then you can chat to us from wherever you are? Where are you?
I'm in the back of a booth in the Trafford Centre because there was a fountain and it was really loud, so I'm hanging out by all the baby chairs for care seats.
Thing. Lovely. In Manchester.
In Manchester.
All right. Well, we have a listen to A Complete Unknown, something completely different to what you're doing, the Bob Dylan biopic, and then we can have a chat about it.
I hear Bob is playing electric.
Not on our stage, he isn't.
They just want me singing Blowing in the Wind for the rest of my goddamn life.
Well, this is gonna piss some people off.
You came here with nothing but a guitar.
You never talk about your family, your past.
People make up their past, Sylvie. They remember what they want, they forget the rest.
I wanna know which side he's on.
I'm not sure they wanna hear what I wanna play, Johnny.
I wanna hear it.
I think it's going to be the year of the biopic in 2025. There's lots more coming. A John Lennon one as well, I hear.
Well, isn't there a whole thing of all the Beatles? Aren't they not getting some as well?
Oh, are they? One each?
Yeah, no, there's like four of them. That's the whole thing that Barry Keoghan was Ringo Starr and all that. Remember that?
Oh, excellent. I don't remember that, but I would look forward to that.
You're not up to date at all.
Sorry about that.
Give it the time.
Let's chat, Bob. Are you a Bob Dylan fan?
Yeah. I'll be real. I knew Blowing in the Wind before I went in to see this, and that was pretty much it. I knew he'd won the like Nobel Prize for Literature, and I was always like, why?
Okay.
Because I never just looked into him much at all.
Okay.
But
would you have gone to see this if it wasn't for work?
I was actually quite excited to see it, which is quite weird. But
is that because of Timothy and the method acting he has adopted for it?
Well, I don't know. It's just kind of one of those things of when it's a person that's this famous, and it's like, why is it? And then you go see it, and you're like, you want to know. I love just seeing what other people's lives are like. Anyway, it's nosy. But it's one of those interesting things. Like Timothy Chalamet has just become really likable lately, and it's kind of like one of those guys you just kind of want to support now. Like, you know,
why was he ever not likable?
I don't know. I think it was just a case of he was very famous and he's getting all the pretty ladies, and everyone's like, I hate that guy.
So but you didn't like him.
I think the minute I learned that he had a favorite soccer team, then I was sent at the end, and it's like not a big team. It's like, okay, he's cool. I like that. Like, you know,
you can hang out with Timothy. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna do a little interesting thing though for you with this movie, right?
Okay.
Because do you know the way sometimes it's like you know me pretty well. So going to this movie, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what Bob Dylan was like. And in it, I realized that he's the kind of guy that if he's told to do one thing, he'll do another thing. And whatever way it's supposed to be, it's not the way he wants to do it.
Okay.
Do you think I liked Bob Dylan?
Yes.
Or no?
I think Bob Dylan might sound a little bit like Brian Griffin. And I don't mean the cartoon character. Yes.
Yeah. No, so I every time he was making a decision, I was like, sure, why does he have to do that? And then he does the thing that I would be like, that's the thing you should do instead. I was like, yes, finally, someone's doing it. He's told to like play a gig a certain way and he stands his ground and he gets booed by the entire crowd.
We can call you Beats Bob Dylan. That's what you can be, you know?
Yeah, yeah, sure. I don't know if that's a fair term, but yeah, I could be Brian in the Wind or something like that.
There you go. This is early 60s. He's arrived in New York and he wants to meet his idol, who is Woody Guthrie. This is where we start off, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's literally he's getting off out of a taxi in New York. That's all he's doing. He's going over to the hospital where Woody Guthrie is. And that's where he meets like Ed Norton's character as well. So like they immediately just kind of jumps into it. And they're like, why did you come to a hospital just like here? And he's like, because I wanted to meet my hero. And I heard he's like sick. So why not? And I was like, do you know what? Fair enough. Mm-hmm.
So like we're in it. He's taken under the wing of a famous folk singer called Seeger, is that right?
Yeah, it was one of those things where I think it was said once in the start and I was like, oh, I can't remember the name.
Who's that guy?
I
know
it's like this. That's Ed Norton. It's just Pete. They would be like, okay, cool. Yeah, Pete.
Yeah, Ed Norton looking not very Ed Norton like in this, I have to say. So tell us the people, like, it's his girlfriend. Obviously, it's a biopic, so it is based on real facts. So his girlfriend at the time that he meets in New York is played by Elle Fanning. So that's Sylvie.
Yeah.
The whole, you know, the whole thing that was going around with the lip reader at the Golden Globes telling us what they were saying to each other at the table. And I saw an awful lot of comments saying, who's the girl sitting beside Elle Fanning? But that's Monica Barbaro, is that right?
Yeah.
And she plays Joan Baez, yeah?
Yeah. So at the start, I'd never heard of Joan Baez before the film. So when they were like, oh, Joan, I was like, oh, is this supposed to be Joni Mitchell? Well, okay. I was dead wrong.
And did you recognize any Joan Baez songs or anything?
Well, like, she did some songs that I knew, but I think like she did like a version of "House the Rising Sun," but that's not an original to her. Like, it's I don't know. It's a really interesting story because it's like all about how he lives a life of both like simplicity and chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes from one to another, and like he kind of uses people all the time, but they're so open to do it. Like Joan, in every biopic, there's always that thing. Oh, he's drank too much and he's fallen into a hole and he's like everyone hates, like he hates, turned away. Everyone's like, he never really does that. He's like, from the beginning, he's always kind of like a bit of an ass.
But, okay.
Like, but it's like, it's not in a, like, it's not in like a malicious way. He's just kind of just a bit of an ass.
But I also think with him, from what I've seen of it, he knew what he wanted and he wasn't afraid to go and get it, and people could call him what they wanted because of that. He just was very one directional in what he wanted in his life and his career.
But I also, like, the whole thing all the way through is he just wanted to just make music and have the crack, like, you know. He never really cared about if he was successful or not. Like, he had this always push to be successful. I think it was kind of like a jealousy because how other people are more famous than him.
Mm-hmm.
But like anytime he achieved success in something, they're like, okay, the next one should be similar. He's like, but I don't want to do that anymore, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then like even in like the post credits, like the credits at the end, they show like a bit of text about him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, he won the Nobel Prize for Literature and he didn't show up to the ceremony. And I'm like, hell yeah, do you know? I love that.
I like it's these quite sort of biopics, especially when you don't know a massive amount about someone, but you feel you should, because it almost is like hearing songs and hearing names that are just, they're in the back of your brain somewhere because they've been referred to in the past. And then suddenly it's all making sense, I think. Like, did you go home and get caught down a Bob Dylan rabbit hole by any chance?
Oh, I was listening to Bob Dylan all the drive home.
Yeah.
Especially Timothée Chalamet's versions of him. He's actually, like, in terms of that, he's a very good singer.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah, he sounds really good on the clips that I've seen as well. I'm really looking forward to this. I like, I loved the Johnny Cash biopic. And Johnny Cash is featured in this as well, isn't he?
Yeah, Johnny Cash is like a friend of his and he's kind of like the devil on his shoulder sometimes when, I feel like it's whenever Bob Dylan's kind of like, I don't know, is it like, well, I think it's Angel and Devil, really, because sometimes it's like, will I go for this thing? And Johnny Cash, like, I want to hear it. Do you do it that way? But then it's like compromise as well. It's like, if people come to hear a certain song, give them what they want as well, that, you know? So it's it's an interesting thing, but it's it's kind of nice seeing these people as like a, they're just all friends, you know?
And in their youth as well, when now they're just massive icons. Okay, sounds like you like it. Will we give it some black puddings?
I'll give it like a, I'm going to say 8.5.
8.5 black puddings out of 10 for a complete unknown. We have been hearing about this for months on end. It is finally in the cinema. 8.5 out of 10 if you want to check it out and you fancy a nice little trip down someone's memory lane. Brian, back here in studio next week?
Probably.
Good stuff. Chat to you then. Definitely was the answer there. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Enjoy life.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.